Moncrief on News Talk.
It's time for Four Questions, where we look back over the weekend and forward to the week ahead. The four questions, as usual, are: what delighted you over the weekend? What annoyed you over the weekend? What did you learn? And what are you looking forward to? The people here to answer the questions are Donal O'Donoghue and Maya Donfee. Good afternoon to you both.
Good afternoon, yeah. Sean.
Good afternoon.
So I really like the idea, because there's lots of different boat trips, Maya, you can do around Dublin Bay, but I like one where you can kind of look in people's windows and see how posh their houses are.
Yes, I mean, that's not the sales pitch for this one.
Yeah, but it would be for me.
I did a lovely boat trip off for a little bit of Dublin Bay with the Marie Keating Foundation to mark the end of 100 kilometres in 30 days, and some of the ambassadors from the foundation came out, people who have just done so much work to advocate for cancer research, all the good stuff. So we went and looked in millionaires' windows. So it's a boat company called the Goat Boat Tours, and it's not one of the kind of more gentle cruise boats. It's a really high-powered rib, so you've got to hold on tight. It goes very, very fast along the kind of the Dalkey Dunleary coastline. So where, you know, Jim Sheridan's former home is, you can almost look in the window to that. There's a few that have bathtubs built into the glass front. Oh. So
you can see Bono in the shower.
You can see Bono's house is set back a little bit, but he comes down and waves sometimes at the boats, allegedly. But it is lovely because you don't get to see Dublin from that perspective. So it was a gorgeous day.
Yeah. And they should do a tour where somebody goes and says, that is so-and-so's house and that's so-and-so's house. And
they
give you telescopes.
The maritime version of the Hollywood Stars, yeah. The bus tour they do with the Stars.
And Al Pacino was always there waving.
Yeah. Well, we have a fair few America. I think Brad Pitt was spotted in one of the balconies and one of the fancy dorky houses recently.
He's back, is he? All right.
Of course, Matt Damon in Super Value getting a bag of cans.
And yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think Brad had a different... Did he have a spar bag? They have to all have a different bag now. But it was amazing, really nice. And actually, there's also Dorky Island there. You can boat trip that to Dorky Island. It's very inexpensive. The joke with the boatman there is it's free to go out to the island, but it costs to come back. Yeah. So, yeah. But it's only like a tenner a head to go out to Dorky Island, pack a picnic. And it's a part of Dublin that a lot of people don't know. And you see a whole different perspective of that side of the coast.
What's really on beautiful. Dorky Island? Is it just like birds, I suppose?
There's some beautiful... There's an old church, a couple of old ruins, some goats. And funny, I was out there last summer with my dad and my son, and we had a picnic, and we were the only people out there. And I made this big speech about, look at these goats, they're so healthy. This is what happens when we leave animals alone to just be themselves. And then a guy said to me afterwards, no, they are the best cared for goats. They have a vet that goes out 3 times a year. It's like, oh, right, okay, there goes that idea. And lots of wild rabbits as well.
In Clew Bay, a lot of the islands in Clew Bay have cattle on them, and they bring them out. Like, they bring them out in boats and leave them there and then bring them back in again. But farmers will go in and out. Well, no, they're not, you know, they'll visit them and make sure they're okay.
We'd say they're delighted being left in peace out there.
Yeah, but it's nice bit of, you know, those islands, a lot of them are used for grazing. Anyway, John, all the medals. It feels like this kind of happened all of a sudden, that, you know, there hasn't been a haul of medals like this.
It's unreal. And when you think about it, like, we grew up in Ireland where we didn't even have an Olympic-sized swimming pool, where there was very little investment in sports. So when you watch the Europeans or you watch the Worlds or you watch the Olympics, it all seemed to be Team GB that was doing everything. But yeah, this weekend was unreal for Irish sports. We had Mark English winning the gold in the 800 metres, Kate O'Connor with that unbelievable win in the heptathlon, Rashida Adeleke in the 200 metres, her silver, and then Andrew Coscarin getting the bronze in the 1500 metres. And then what made it even better was across to Paris for the aquatics. Mm. And you've got Mona McSherry with her 3 medals. And who was the other one? Ellen Walsh also got 2 goals in the medley, in the 200 metre individual medley and the 400 metre medley. It's unreal. So yeah, it was just a wholesome weekend of sports.
Yeah.
And the other thing was in the UFC, we had an Irish fighter challenge, Ian Garry. He didn't get the win, but at least he behaved himself, unlike some other Irish MMA fighters who shall remain nameless.
Okay, the unnamed MMA fighter, and we have no idea who you're referring to, of course. what did this person allegedly do?
Well, he allegedly went from having probably a great profile in the sport to bring the sport into real disrepute.
Oh, you mean in general, rather than just his work weekend?
But Ian Garry actually went, he competed over 5 rounds, he did really well, and he was polite at the end, and he was respectful to his opponent, and he's actually a credit to Irish sport. So yeah, unreal weekend for Irish sport, I think.
Yeah. The thing is, I suppose a lot of athletes would have, you know, train abroad or and Andrew Coscarin actually did get one of those, wasn't an American university, but didn't like it and came home and had to start all over again. But I suppose the swimming is...
Yeah, and we
it's
see
more
that
extraordinary because we really are still thin on those kind of resources in this country.
Big time. And even we see that with some of the other swimmers that have gone and swam in the States and come back to Ireland because they just, you know...
They swim all the way back.
Yeah, that's training.
But I think we're starting to see, I know a lot of them are training abroad, but we're starting to see a little bit of the payoff of more investment, Sports Ireland campus and those places. Mm. And I think also it's such a feel-good factor and it encourages kids to get into it at a municipal level. So hopefully it will, you know, we've got to support our elite athletes, but also grassroots, all the kind of young kids who want to get into it. But it's just really exciting, isn't it?
Well, that's what do they say? Can't see it, can't be it. I think when there's that level of expectation that, you know, Ireland aren't just there to make up the numbers, they're really competing and really doing well. I think it paves the way for the next generation.
Yeah. And it also, it doesn't, like my youngest daughter, Gus, is a swimmer and is quite good at it. Now, not like no one's booking their tickets to the Olympics, but like you can see, like she's been doing it for a few years and she's ripped and she's got a pair of shoulders and we're looking at her going, you must be adopted because you're not related to either of us. Because that's an athletic kind of a body there, which is fantastic to see. Now, I suppose the thing that annoyed you both, and I suppose it's more than just annoyance, it's kind of horror, really. It's those horrific crashes at the weekend and the implications of all that.
Yeah, I think the whole country is absolutely outraged. You know, when you look at the collision on the M9, five people have lost their lives, three women and a seven-year-old child seriously injured. And one of the things that the Garda commissioner came out afterwards and said was that a lot of similar incidents seem to be driven by this idea of people creating content on TikTok, antisocial behaviour. News streams are filled with, you know, videos of people either stealing cars or driving really, you know, joyriding and so on. And when we're in an age where attention is currency, I think the first thing we have to do is, you know, take that attention away from this type of behavior. I think the whole country is just absolutely in turmoil. Could have been any of us on the way to the airport for an early flight.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And apparently part of it is that when they're driving the wrong way down the motorway, they know the guards can't follow them because the guards aren't allowed to break the law by driving the wrong way down a motorway, which would probably cause even more problems.
Yeah, what's it called? Contraflow pursuit, which they're not allowed to do. And there's so many conversations to have here about getting right back to, are we failing our young people? Like, why are these young boys doing this? You know, are their parents aware? What else should we put in place to kind of keep these kids away from this kind of behaviour? Because it's becoming rampant. But also, we need to power our Gardaí to actually do their job. And, you know, as we know, there aren't enough Gardaí, but they also don't have, they live in fear of being prosecuted. Now, I know they're bringing in emergency legislation. They're fast tracking it through now, hopefully, to safeguard our Gardaí. But, I mean, the whole thing is very, very depressing. But we need to have, a very big, loud conversation about it, I think.
Well, I suppose the more disturbing thing is that you'll have these young fellas and like it's risking their own lives to an acute degree just to get likes on social media.
Exactly.
That's astonishing. That doesn't make any sense.
Years ago, what happened was they were doing this for approval from their mates, you know, whoever could see them or whoever was around. Now, social media has just amplified it. I mean, something popped up on my newsfeed there a couple of weeks ago and it was called Four Man Up, where there's four young fellas, I'd say about 14 years of age, four young fellas on one moped and videoing it as they go, you know, and driving through the streets at breakneck speed.
So, yeah, and teenage boys have always done silly things. So have teenage girls. Hmm. But this, like you say, the sort of the provocation of it now and the attention that you actually say it's for likes, but now you're looking for the attention of thousands and thousands of strangers. But but the point is the fearlessness of it as well, because they know the guards can do nothing and that needs to change. And hopefully, I mean, those five boys are dead. Like, they're not coming back. So hopefully you'd hope that other kids might look at it and go, you know what, I don't want to be that statistic.
You'd hope. But I suppose it's peer pressure.
Yeah.
I suppose it's peer pressure magnified by 10 because it's peer pressure across social media.
Yeah.
That you'd have people you don't know saying, you're too chicken to do that.
Yeah, let's go back to smoking behind bike sheds, can we? Keep it more innocent.
Oh, yeah. Right, so summer camp. Well, we're nearly at the end of the summer. You'd think the summer camp trauma would be over.
Well, because I was lulled into a false sense of security, Sean. I think every single parent, and obviously non-parents, because they read the articles that come in about May time in the papers about summer camps. And like problem solving is a very important skill. But for working parents over the summer, it is very complicated. The dynamic, it's a matrix of summer camps. And I thought I had, I think also think it's really important that kids get to spend a bit of time doing nothing over the holidays, just sitting, getting up late, hanging out in the garden, if you're lucky enough to have a garden. But the summer camps, sick parents too have to work. So I had booked a summer camp this week for my son, who's 11. And the age range was 6 to 12. And we were told they'd be put in groups with their peers. Mm-hmm. And the poor kid today went in and found he is the only 11-year-old.
Oh.
And
it's,
he said to me, he sent a message on his little watch saying, it's a sea of five-year-olds. Get me out of here. So I'm going to have to come up with something else this summer, this week rather. And just when I thought I'd nailed it, I came back and bit me on the arse. So
you think they would have told you that?
I know. I won't say who they are, but I'm a bit upset. Because normally they're quite good and they will let you know the day before and say, just so you know, there aren't any other kids your child's age here, and then you can make a decision based on that. So just when you think you've nailed the summer camps, I realise I haven't. Yeah. There's also a no man's land the last week in August when the summer camp staff, a lot of whom work in after school care facilities for other schools, need some time off. So there's this no man's land the last week of August. I might open a summer camp because I think I would.
Last week's summer camp.
I could name my prize.
You could, yeah. Because it's kind of nearly there, and I suppose a lot of parents are...
We're nearly there, but we still have 2 weeks left. And if parents are working, there's a lot of kids being dragged around to work this week and next week.
Yeah.
That'll be my reality tomorrow again now. So.
Or they're dragging their parents out. I have to get all the back to school stuff, which costs an absolute fortune as well. On a related note, Donal, what you learned this weekend is about screen time, but parents' screen time as much as kids' screen time.
That's right. So there was a UK study that suggests that stressed parents may actually be driving up their children's screen time. So I think the connection is that when the kids see their parents spending more time on devices, that they're spending more time. But this piece of research analysed 4,700 families that had two-year-old children in England. And across the study, two-year-olds averaged 129 minutes per day, which is twice the World Health Organization's recommended maximum. And only 34% met the requirements. I don't think a two-year-old needs to be on a device at all. But it's pretty scary. And then you see, you see that the parents are spending more time on device, the child is spending more time on device, and then we're seeing all the attention deficit issues in the classroom and detachment. It's just pretty sad.
Mm. Yeah, I'm not sure a two-year-old should be spending too much time on an iPad. Unless they're working, of course. You know, that's a different thing.
I don't know. I mean, it's probably all bad, but a two-year-old is probably looking at Peppa Pig or something.
Yeah.
They're not on Instagram.
The dangers, you know, as well is actually it's very bad for their eyes.
Yes.
Because you're looking at a screen too close. Like TV is not nearly so bad. And also TV doesn't go on to the next thing, on the algorithm automatically. Yeah. I will admit, I travelled a lot when my son was two, so we did have iPads on planes. But they were, you know, I kept it to the minimum. But it is, it's a very difficult thing for parents though, isn't it?
Look, we've all done it. But I think the really interesting switch that has happened is that, you know, we grew up in a generation where you were outside and your parents didn't really know what you were doing. During the summer, you were out, you came home when you were hungry. We're now so afraid of letting our kids be free outside that we're keeping them in, but we're giving them, a lot of people are giving them, you know, unmonitored access to the internet, which is a dangerous place to be as well. So it's like, which is the lesser of the
so
two evils?
Donal is saying, put your two-year-olds outside. Is that what you're saying?
Let them run wild and free.
Run wild. Yeah.
And when the street lights come on, they can come home.
Well, isn't a part of this though, is that, like, there's a lot of narrative about, we have to be very careful about kids and teenagers being on screens because it's addictive. Without recognising the fact that adults can, just because your brain is fully formed doesn't mean you can't be addicted to your phone.
Absolutely. And I'm reminded of, I was sitting in a coffee shop not too long ago and I remember looking across and seeing a dad and his daughter sitting not too far away from me. And he was on his device and she was there looking to engage and chat with him. But, you know, maybe it was the only time they were spending together over that weekend. And he was completely detached. And I just thought, what? It's getting very sad.
Yeah, it's all too common.
Yeah, and if you look into any, if you look at, and when I take the Dart into work every day and occasionally have a look around to just count how many people are on phones, and it's all the vast majority.
Yeah, 99%.
Guilty.
Yeah. It's not sure.
I bring a novel on the train all the time. All the time.
Well, good. Good for you. No, I mean they're heavy, but you
I
can bring
it in. Yeah, no, God. I know. I do sometimes. I do sometimes. Do you know what I do? Oh, God, this is, no, don't help myself. I often bring the weekend newspaper magazines when I go on a train or a bus to catch up with them.
Yeah, that's a good idea. 2-year-olds are not meant to look at screens. It impacts their brain development. It's not recommended, says one texter. I put a timer on my phone. I was shocked at how much time I spent on it. I've tried to cut back, but it's difficult. You see so many people on their phones and ignoring their kids, yet they criticise their kids' use. And that's, yeah, that's part of
that. Timers are a very good idea for everybody in the family, I think. Yeah. I have a timer on my, I've taken Twitter or X off my phone, and it's, God, it's been a revelation getting rid of that. But Instagram now, I have a timer on it. And it just reminds me when I've hit a couple of hours, and you go, how was that 2 hours in one day? But it happens very easily.
Yeah.
Very easily.
Yeah. And people are like clocking up 7 or 8 hours.
Yeah.
In a day.
Yeah.
I don't know how they do that. So you're going to Amsterdam.
Yeah, and go for a culture. That's what everybody does. As soon as you say we're going to Amsterdam, you get the wink. And
Donald with a massive bong in town.
But like that, it's so sad, you know, when you say Amsterdam, everybody's thinking bongs and weed and red light districts. But I'm going for the architecture.
Cultural metropolis.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to it. A midlife trip to Amsterdam. 6 of us are going. There's 3 couples going. One of the guys is an architect, so he's really looking forward to looking at some buildings. But I am looking forward to the coffee shop and finding a really, really good, strong cappuccino.
Yeah.
Sure.
That shouldn't be too difficult. And anyway, that kind of the red light district is quite small.
It's
not like it's unavoidable. The vast majority of Amsterdam, you wouldn't think that was there. And it is, you're right, it's absolutely beautiful. Around the canals is beautiful. Their science museum was really good.
Okay.
Nemo.
You have to take a boat out to it, and it's very interactive. Now, it's brilliant for kids, but actually adults go. Of course, they've all been to the coffee shops before they visit there to make it even more enjoyable. But it is very much
worth it. I'm looking forward to it. It's a flying visit. We're going for 2 nights. So, yeah it should be good.
Yeah, cool. And what are you looking forward to?
This is a little bit of a boastful one. And it will no doubt elicit, well, isn't it well for you? As a recently, I only learned to drive 3 years ago.
Okay.
And I have a little 13-year-old micro and I'm very proud of that car. But this week, a luxury car company got in touch with me and said, would you like to borrow a nice car for the next few weeks and tell us what you think of it? Now, I can't afford to buy this car, but I said yes.
Okay.
So it's the first time, I shouldn't say it's on air, like, oh, we're not going to give you the car now. So it's the first time I'll be driving a nice big car.
Yeah.
So my son said, can you please bring me back to school in that car? I said, look, you have to understand, it's short term. We'll have a fun time. Then we're going back to our 13-year-old Micra.
How much bigger than the Micra is this car? Do you know?
Significantly.
And what happens if you ding it?
I hopefully I'm covered by their insurance, but I'm a very safe driver, Sean. I'd like to let you know. So.
Okay. Yeah. But, and what happens? Because, you know, they want you to say nice things about it. What happens if you kind of get in and go, this is just freaking me out?
I'll be very honest, because I am nothing if not honest. Yeah.
Okay.
I always feel like I have nothing to lose.
Yeah.
But apart from the car.
Being offered more posh cars, I would have thought.
No. I'm entirely made of integrity, Sean. Yeah, you must know that by now. But you know what? And I also, I'm not, you know, I'm happy with my 13-year-old Micra, but it will be nice to drive around. And you know what? I'm also doing a little social experiment, because in the Micra, especially a certain kind of driver, it's always a man, I'm sorry to say, and sometimes a taxi driver, there's an impatience behind my car because they assume it's a little old lady. And the second if you're at a light and it goes green, the second it goes green, they're beeping at you. And they don't do that if the car in front is a fancy executive car. So now I'm going to be in the fancy executive car and see. Joke's on you, pal.
You're going from being the beepy to the beeper.
I won't, though. I won't. We'll see.
Yeah, because I often wonder, people in posh cars, do they, you know, if you're trying to get out or turn, you know, and a car lets you through, that posh cars tend to let other posh cars go through, and they just kind of look down their noses.
Don't let the old micros through.
You know, the old bangers.
I know.
I don't think there's any study that supports that.
No, probably not. No, it's totally my theory. But also as well, that'd be interesting because, a Micra has got buttons, and it's, you know, you're in charge of the car, whereas all your modern cars now, it does feel a bit like the car's in charge of you.
Yeah, well, my little car is a manual, so you're fully in control. There's no screens, there's no parking sensors. My little boy occasionally goes beep, 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 beep when I get too close to a wall, which is very handy. So yeah, it'll be the first time that I'm basically being driven around by a screen.
You're dead right, though. A lot of the new fancy cars, you've nearly got an iPad for your controls. So whether you're turning up your radio or putting on your AC, one of the big risks is driver distraction, because you're now not just using a button to change the fan speed, but you're kind of going into an app. So be careful, Maya.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, they're trying to bring back knobs into cars, actually. Old-fashioned kind of radio knobs kind of thing, because for precisely
they're less
that
distracting.
Reason.
Bring back knobs,
and they'll, want you as well to kind of have a subscription to something before you can use the sat-nav, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So they're just, you know, it's just another way of hoovering money out of people.
Bring back maps and knobs, that's what I say.
Okay, we've already
trashed
this new fancy car anyway, So Maya will be in next week saying, oh, it's fantastic, my new car. Maya and Donald, thanks a million.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.